Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Welcome to the Pro Basketball Talk podcast. I'm Dan Feldman. Happy to be joined by Chad Ford of NBABigBoard.com and Chad Ford's NBA Big Board podcast. Chad, how are you doing?
I'm great. It's my favorite time of the year, and man, we're getting close.
We are. So I'm not somebody like you who studies the draft year-round, tracking these prospects as they progress. I catch up late. I watch video late. I rely on people like you to give me some point of reference to see who to look into, and I try to dig into them. And I think I largely get an outline of how these prospects look, but I know I miss a lot of nuance along the way. So I wanted to talk to you about some of the prospects where the way I view the draft and the way you do it so much more exhaustively, where I feel like I might be missing something. Some of the prospects who I find more confounding as I look into it at this later stage. So I think the player to start with, the one who I think is tripping up everybody, including the draft experts, that's Alperen Sengun. What do you make of him? I feel like even the draft experts, there's no consensus on him.
There's not. Maybe I'm a so-called draft expert. I don't know. But I also sometimes get confounded by these guys as well. And doesn't matter how much I watch him. And Sengun is a great example of that, because on one hand, analytically, he really pops. His numbers in Turkey are like historic for a player that age coming out of, you know, not the best league in Europe. I'd say that's the ACB in Spain, but one of the best leagues in Europe. He won MVP of that league at 18. That's unheard of in the Turkish league. That's not something young players typically do. And when you watch him play, it's clear that he is extremely gifted as an offensive player. He is a savant in some ways in his ability to score around the basket. His passing ability is high. He just feels and understands the game in a unique way for a player his age and his size. The problem, I think the reason people are tripping up, is the way Turkey played him this year was as a traditional five, back to the basket, most of his scoring in the paint. NBA doesn't really play like that anymore. That's just not the way that you really see NBA centers really thrive in the league anymore. And, you know, a few years ago, Jahlil Okafor was considered a potential number one pick in the draft. And right when the league was starting to change, and Okafor had all of that to his game, but the league was just changing around him. And so the question for him is, can he do more than that? And there's some scouts that think, yes, like he's going to be able to stretch the floor. He's a pretty mobile athlete. Once he gets in the NBA and is asked to do different things, he'll be able to do it. And some scouts that are more skeptical and say, you know, look, we didn't see him do it in Turkey. He shot like 14% from three. He wasn't a great free throw shooter. How is he going to stay on the floor defensively in the NBA? You've seen in the playoffs what happened with big men that aren't particularly mobile, and what happens to them in the, as teams just burn them in the playoffs. So, yeah, he might be great offensively, but how is he going to be able to withstand the defensive assignments in the NBA? And I think those are all legitimate questions. The one thing I keep coming back to with Sengun is that if you look back historically, a player at his age putting up numbers like this in a good European league, the chances of them failing, I can't really come up with a really great comp or prospect of a young man who has put up these type of numbers at his age that didn't turn out to be something in the NBA. Now, something, I think, is the key word. Is he Dario Saric? If that's the case, you know, it's a good player, but you don't want to get too excited about it. Or is he, you know, something more than that? Is he Nikola Jokic? I don't think he's Jokic because of his lack of size. But I do think that you're seeing some of the offensive wizardry that we see from Jokic from him.
One of my concerns with him is it seems like in everything I watch, maybe not everything, a lot of things, he is excelling as an interior scorer against slightly smaller centers. And he's about 6'10". I don't think he's going to have those matchups as often in the NBA. Am I on to something there? What generally did you make of his league in Turkey this year? Historically, I'm with you. Players his age dominating at that high of a level in Europe are usually good. But what about Turkey this year? Could there be an exception with everything going on in the world?
It could be. I mean, we're faced with that everywhere in the draft right now. You know, how do we gauge kids' college seasons, given the limited practice time, given that they didn't play over the summer, given, you know, teams like Stanford that had to play on the road all year? How do we gauge the G League? This is the first year that the G League was really in place, and they played in a bubble for, you know, 16 games. And what does that mean? And how does it translate? And internationally, the same sort of question is there for sure. I will just say, generally, the Turkish league is better than NCAA Division I basketball. A pro Turkish team would probably destroy a top college team. And so, you know, you look at some of that and say, well, okay, I'm comfortable with taking him, but you know, it's where. And I think the range is 8 to 15. Is probably the range that teams get comfortable with him. And I'm certainly comfortable with him going in that range.
Scotty Barnes, changing gears, from Florida State. I think a lot of people are very high on him. I'm not so high. I might still have him fifth on my draft board. I see a big drop after four. But I'm so concerned about his shooting. What is your confidence level in how he's going to develop as a shooter? And how good can he be if his jump shot does not come along?
Yeah, you know, one thing I'll say about shooting is it is one skill that we've seen time and time again NBA prospects improve in the NBA. You can't necessarily improve your athleticism, your lateral quickness, your explosiveness a little bit, you know, around the margins. But you're kind of the athlete that you are. You certainly can't grow taller. You know, you're the height that you're – you can't have length. You're the length that you are. But lots of prospects improve their shooting. And so – I think everybody watches Ben Simmons right now and says, oh my gosh, you know, what if he turns out to be Ben Simmons? And oh no, you know, Ben Simmons, you know, couldn't stay on the floor for Philadelphia in the playoffs. And, you know, a couple of things that I'll say to that. First of all, Ben Simmons is a really unique outlier case where something psychologically is also happening with him. He's actually regressed as a shooter, which is pretty uncommon. I don't know what exactly was going on with him. But even with that, we know Ben Simmons, his whole career has not been a good shooter. He's a three-time All-Star. He was runner-up for Defensive Player of the Year this year. There's talent there, even when Ben Simmons can't shoot. Giannis Antetokounmpo won Finals MVP, can't shoot. Is a shaky free throw shooter, is a shaky three-point shooter, dominates in other ways. Now, I'm not saying Scottie Barnes is Giannis, but there are so many things to like about Scottie Barnes when you go past the shooting. His 6'8", 7'3", wingspan, athletic, mobile, strong, can guard positions 1 through 5, played point guard at Florida State, and as a real point guard, not as some sort of gimmick. He brought the ball up. He was an excellent passer. His turnovers were low. He has a great understanding of the game. He's a load going downhill and in transition. He's very difficult to stop. He finishes above the rim. You see him getting down low and guarding point guards at times. We're seeing guarding fives at times in an increasingly positionless NBA where positions matter less. Scotty Barnes is a true 1 through 5 player.
I do like his ability as a point guard. I compare him a little bit to Justice Winslow, who is playing like a point guard later right in his time with the Heat. But there's a lower ceiling with that, right? Like, if that's your style, he's not that dynamic scorer with the ball that I think a lot of the top teams have. I guess you make a good point about Giannis. It doesn't always have to be that way. But what do you think Barnes would do if a team just said, hey, the way we're going to compensate for your lack of shooting is we're going to put the ball in your hands. That way teams will have to defend you. You're going to be our de facto point guard, and we'll try and surround you with shooters. How do you think he'd fit in that way?
I think that's how you should play him, and I also think you should then post him up all the time with smaller guards that are on them because he's a point guard, and post him up in the paint. He's got a nice touch around the rim. He can finish above the rim. That's primarily how I'd use him, and you know, you work on the shot. He is a hard worker. He's a gym rat. He's going to work on his game, and you know, some of – you know, the knock on Ben Simmons, which is a fair knock, is, you know, what's Ben doing every summer? You know, what's he doing to sort of improve and work on his game? And I think some of the frustration that teams have had with Ben Simmons is that he just hasn't improved his game the way that he needs to. And, you know, some of that just comes down to the player and what the player is going to do to put in the work. And I think the raves about Scottie for his work ethic and his attitude towards things make me confident that he might not ever be a lights out 3-point shooter. I have no way of knowing whether he can get there. Guys with big hands like that, sometimes it's difficult, but that he's a passable 3-point shooter, that he can get to 34-35%, that he has some sort of gravity there. I think that's a really plausible outcome for him. And if it is, if it hits there, a plausible outcome, if he hits that plausible outcome, there's a chance that he's the best player in this draft. A 6'8", plays five positions, can be an all defensive team guy who can play point guard, can see over the defense, can post up smaller guards, and he can shoot 34-35% from three. That could be the best player in this draft.
Could be. You're more confident, I think, than I am of him getting to that level as a shooter. Change it up a little bit. Jonathan Kuminga from the G League. Every comp I see is, he could be this type of Kawhi Leonard comes up a lot as his upside, some type of more of a small forward. I look at him, he's big, he's strong, he's physical. Why is he not projected as a power forward?
He could be. Again, you know, projecting positions in the NBA is becoming increasingly difficult because we're becoming an increasingly positionless league. You know, Bruce Brown was playing center for the Nets, during the playoffs, and was kind of effective at doing it at what, 6'5"? There's all sorts of roles that can play. I think with Kuminga, he's a blank slate. I think it's trying to understand what his game is and what he's going to be and where he's going to thrive and where he isn't. There's just, we know the least about him. He reclassified. He was actually kind of hard to see and scout in high school. He didn't play as much as some of the other guys, was moving around a little bit. And then, you know, in the G League, we didn't even get a full G League season for him before he got injured. He started really hot, then he sort of struggled a little bit, which I would expect for an 18-year-old prospect like that. I don't think there's anything, red flags that come up that playing in the G League without competition is problematic for him. I just think people don't know what he's going to be yet. And that can lead to, you know, over enthusiasm. He can be Kawhi, or it can lead to under enthusiasm. Well, I can't peg him, and so I'm going to pass on him because I don't know what he's going to be. I think that probably the middle ground is where you should be with Jonathan Kuminga. I think he's the sixth best prospect in this draft. I think that's exactly where he should go in the draft, is number six. I think his upside is so intriguing that he's better than anybody seven below, but his downside is enough that I'm not sure he should be above 1-5. To me, it's just like a no-brainer. The Thunder have the time and patience to develop him. They like players like that anyway. It just seems like that's a match made in heaven. I know there's talk that the Thunder may not take him at six. I just don't understand it. To me, that's the perfect, one of the more perfect matches in this draft.
I agree. Jalen Johnson, forward from Duke. I really like what I saw from him when I watched video of him. I also do very much believe things like work ethic, attitude, all of those things matter so much. I also think they're extremely difficult to evaluate, especially from afar and especially projecting forward. How concerned should we be about Jalen Johnson leaving Duke midseason?
I'm not that concerned. I know that there's some people that have asked questions. It's not just that he left Duke, but that, you know, he moved around a bit in high school as well. And why? I mean, look, we're in a pandemic. Nobody knows what's going on in that young man's head or his family or his life right now. Many, many players that I've talked to talked about, you know, extreme feelings of depression, isolation, that were happening just like the rest of the world, going through this right now. So I read less into that, and I read more into, he's another guy that he fits probably certain specific systems and just doesn't fit in others. He really needs the ball in his hand. He's a beast in transition. He's a really good passer when he gets out on the floor. He's a good rebounder. He's a good athlete. But if you watched him at Duke, when they got into the half court offense, he struggled. And, you know, what are you going to use him as? I think probably his best outcome is as a small ball five. That's, I think, a role that I could see him thriving in, and then, you know, grabbing rebounds and going and pushing down the floor. but not every team is going to play that way or want to use him that way. And so I think his draft stock is going to be one of the most interesting ones to watch on draft night, like talent level, top 10 talent. But if he ended up at 17, 20, even like 23, that wouldn't shock me.
Wow, that'd be quite the slide for him. Zaire Williams from Stanford, who I know you're high on, you know, for somebody like me who watched what he did at Stanford, wasn't tracking him as closely, I don't see it, right? Like, he did not have that type of season at Stanford. What did you see from him before he got to college? Where you still have this enthusiasm despite what he did at Stanford?
Yeah, that's a totally fair. I also watched him at Stanford and thought the game film was awful. I mean, I don't think there's any way to sugarcoat it. It was awful. Among the top prospects, young prospects in this draft, there's a few guys that maybe a little bit more disappointing. Brandon Boston, maybe Greg Brown, but there weren't many. It was disappointing. And so then you have to look at the context. And the context, Stanford doesn't play a home game all year, only has 1 hour a day of practice. He injures his knee right before the season starts. He's got this bulky brace on. He's on a veteran team in Stanford that doesn't really highlight one and dones. They're not used to having prospects like that. You could see he had a really hard time meshing with the team and the system. But I think a lot of that could just be, you know, a lack of practice time and, you know, lack of sort of understanding how to use Zaire. And so, and then he had some deaths in the family and some other things that were going on as well because of COVID. It was a rough, rough season for Zaire. So you go back and look at his high school game and you see a 6'10 guy who's bouncy athletic, who could shoot the basketball, who could handle the basketball, who's the prototypical big wing that, you know, teams are hungry after. And you go, which guy is he? And, you know, I don't know the answer to that, but his workouts have been extremely strong. Talking to just multiple teams about that, they love what he's done in the workouts. He's put about 13 pounds on, which is a big deal. The athleticism and explosion is back. He shot the ball well in workouts. Obviously, the ball handling is there. And one of the things that several NBA teams told me was he's got a chip on his shoulder because he was, you know, ranked as a top 10 high school player in the country. And he's just been out there dominating when he's doing these 2-on-2 and 3-on-3 workouts with guys that are ranked higher than him. And I think it's brought some confidence level back from some teams that maybe this is an example of someone who just the sample size at college wasn't representative of who he is as a player.
Let's get to one more. JT Thorne from Auburn going the other way. I think there's so many players who disappointed this season, but still have the tools where you're intrigued. And most of them I see are ranked higher than JT Thorne. I see somebody who's athletic, who can protect the rim, who can move in space, who's shown some potential as a three-point shooter. Why is he not getting more love higher on draft boards?
Well, I think that, I think he surprised people that he was in this draft. I think everyone thought, given what he did at Auburn, he's back for another year. Teams were shocked when he skipped the combine and said he's going to be out. So I think there was some catch-up work that was going on there. And then I think it's, again, just talking about what sort of project is JT Thorne right now. Is he, you know, 1 year, 2 years in the G League before he's ready to go? He needs to add strength. You know, everybody's projecting him as a stretch-the-floor guy, and there's some skills there, but they're not all the way there yet. I think he's, and then, you know, as a high school player, he was ranked highly, but not as highly as some of the other guys. And so is this one where you're projecting because he's big and he's mobile and he's athletic that he's going, you know, to be this star down the road, but there's so much work to get there. I think he's a good prospect. I think, you know, in the 25 to 35 range is probably where the risk, you know, meets the reward. And I'd say the same thing about Josh Christopher. I'd say the same thing about Brandon Boston, Greg Brown, what have you. Those are all guys with interesting upsides that have enough warts that, you know, that's the sort of moment when you take the swing on them.
All right. Well, thanks a ton for joining me. I feel far more illuminated on the draft now after talking to you. I really appreciate it. And, good luck figuring everything out between now and tomorrow night.
All right. Thank you so much, Dan.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Life is a highway. and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.